The following is brought to you by KMUN, your Coast Community Radio. Our recording of the Candidates Forum in Astoria is broken into two parts. In this first part, you'll hear from the candidates in the Oregon State Representative District 32 race. District 32 includes Clatsop County and Tillamook County, and a portion of Columbia County. Republican incumbent Cyrus Javity is a dentist based in Tillamook. His challenger, Andy Davis, is an analyst for the Oregon Health Authority and currently serves on the Astoria City Council. He stepped up to fill the Democratic nomination after Logan Laity, a Tillamook Democrat, withdrew in June. Part two of this recording, featuring candidates for the Astoria City Council and the Warrenton City Commission, is available at kmun.org.
I'm the building principal of Astoria High School, and it is my privilege this evening to moderate this forum. By way of procedure, each candidate will be afforded 2 minutes for an introduction and to explain the reasons why they should be elected to their respective positions. Candidates will be asked to answer written questions submitted by the audience that will be then handed to me, and I will relate those questions. Each candidate will have 1 minute and 30 seconds to respond to each question. The timekeeper will inform the candidates when 30 seconds remain and upon exhaustion of their time. At the end of the questions in each segment of tonight's forum, each candidate will have 2 minutes for closing remarks. So without further ado, let's begin with the questions. Question number one. That would be a great way to start. So yes, let's start with our statements. And first we'll have Andrew Davis begin with his 2 minute introductory statement.
Thank you, Principal. My name is Andy Davis. I am running for House District 32, State Representative for the State of Oregon. Thank you all for being here tonight. Thank you to AAUW and to Astoria High School for hosting us. Thanks to KMUN and the Astorian for covering the event as well. The main reasons that I'm running are continuations of the work that I've been doing on City Council. Really, that's around housing in the district. I'm adding to that healthcare and education. Those aren't the privilege of City Council to work on, but those are important issues for the state. I'm a Democrat. I replaced Logan Laity on the ballot after he had to drop out following his primary win. So I've had a relatively short time to get to know all the voters in the district as a candidate, but I'm happy that I've had the chance to go around and discuss issues with voters, talk to them about what I would like to do at the state, and talk to them about me as a candidate. I think what I bring to the office and the reason that I really want to run is first my experience on City Council, but even in local committee work leading up to City Council. I've served on budget committee for both the county and the city of Astoria. I chaired the county budget committee. I got to hear and see a lot of the issues that were affecting county residents in Clatsop County as a whole. And of course I have the experience in Astoria. I also got the chance to chair our citizen advisory committee for our comprehensive plan update. So I got to interact with state land use law in that capacity. And so I think I bring a variety of experience, and I'm really motivated to try and help our district and especially the folks that need help from the state. You know, we have increasing challenges with cost of living and cost of housing that people need help with. So that's really the thrust of why I want to serve in this office and why I want to go to Salem. Thank you for being here. I appreciate all your participation. Nice to see so many faces in the crowd tonight.
Thank you. My name is Cyrus Javity. I want to thank AAW for putting this on. Thank you, Principal Jackson. And thank you, Andy, for being here. I didn't know Andy very well before this, and I think he's a stand-up guy. And I've really enjoyed these opportunities to sit up here in front of members of the community and answer these questions. And I know it takes a lot of nerve to do that and to put yourself out there to when some people might disagree with you. I am a resident of Tillamook. I used to live in Astoria. I'm a dentist. And this was my first term as state representative. I used to be able to say I was a political outsider. Now I have to say I'm a political insider. As a parent, I got into this race because I was concerned about the education of our children. I wanted to make sure we were doing everything we could to make sure they were well educated and they had the resources they needed. As a dentist and an employer in a small business, it was difficult post-COVID to find people to hire. And especially since it was hard for them to find places to live. And in the healthcare arena, it's difficult to find people who are trained and ready for those jobs. And so I wanted to get in to the Capitol and see what we could do about that. And then as a resident, like I said, I know exactly how expensive it is to live here now. It's difficult to find a home that's within reach for most residents, and that makes it difficult in all sorts of different ways. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized the government's the problem. And we have a lot of antiquated laws that make it difficult, and I thought I wanted to get there and be a part of that discussion too. So I decided to run for re-election because I feel like there's more to be done, and just getting my feet wet and looking forward to going back and working again there. Last session, the Speaker of the House nominated me to go to Virginia as one of the only members of the legislature in Oregon to work with legislatures from around the country on developing new policy ideas. And so I have a track record of working across the aisle. I hope to continue to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for those introductions. The first question that we have this evening is a two-part question. What is the role of a free media in a democratic system? And how do you attempt to engage in the media towards ensuring your own campaign transparency? Mr. Davis, we'll start with your comments.
Sure, I think so. A, what fun. This is a new question. We've done a couple of forums and this is brand new. I think that, A, that we were just talking about the media and its role when we were just sitting up here waiting for the event to begin. And I think it's critical, especially for small towns, rural areas, for us to have free media, for us to have things like our local newspaper or KMUN, who are providing coverage of events like these. We both have worked in local politics as well. You know, I don't know who would fill that vacuum for something like city council and what's going on in your city if we didn't have a resource like the Astorian here to give us some baseline that we can all turn to. So that's critical that the media takes up that space and informs everyone in the community. I think as far as our relationship as a campaign to the media, I've tried to make myself available to the various newspapers and newsletters in the district, answered their questions. That, you know, we get arrays of questions from the different newsletters, especially about our campaigns, about who's funding us, things like that. Tried to give them full answers to the extent possible, and just tried to be available for anyone who really wants to know more about us as candidates. I think one of the unfortunate things with only having a minute and a half for answers like this is we can't go into more depth like we sometimes would like to, and papers, especially if they have extended coverage online, can really fill that void.
Very good, thank you. Representative Javadi.
Well, I agree, and we are lucky on the coast to have the Daily Historian, the Headline Herald. I think the journalists, the nice thing about them is they try to report with integrity and get the story right. And, you know, we get asked those questions, and I feel like they've always done a great job of reporting not only verbatim what we've said, but also the spirit and the tone of what we're trying to communicate, both while we're serving in office, but also when things get a little messy in the campaign. And so I think it's important that the media is protected, that they continue to have the resources they need and the space they need to do their job. It's very frustrating when you have non-official media who ask you questions and then misreport that, because the public and the elected officials need to be able to trust that that message is getting conveyed correctly. And I feel like for the most part, that happens. And so I think that we need to continue to protect that. As far as transparency goes, I think it's super critical, because this might be, like Andy said, the only opportunity that we get to share this message. And we need to make it as clear as we can so that voters and members of the community can make decisions and understand whether or not they can trust or approve of the job that's being done for them.
Very good. The next question, again, is a multifaceted question. Betsy Johnson has claimed in television ads that the housing crisis is solved. Do you believe this is true? And if so, when? And if not, what more can we do? Representative Javadi.
No, I'm not quite sure of that quote or what she might have said. I don't think the housing crisis is solved. We clearly are feeling that, I think, every day. Anybody who's trying to move to the community or lives in the community wants to find a rental property to live in. It's affordable. I think we have, or even workforce housing. I mean, our employers can't hire because there's no place for the for people who are interested to work. I know in Tillamook County, for example, the hospitals, the Tillamook Creamery, Hampton Lumber, the school district has a hard time hiring teachers because they can't come out and find a place to live on the wage that the school district can offer. So no, I don't think it's solved. I think we're working on it. We're looking for ways to immediately reallocate the inventory of homes so that it is affordable. But when we talk about affordable housing with the big A, you know, the kind of housing that you have to qualify for income, we need more of it. And then when we talk about affordable housing with the small A, we need to increase the supply of it as well so that people can move into and out of the community. And so, no, I don't think it's done. I think there's more work to be done. I think the governor took the first steps in that direction last session with some of the bills that we passed to try to cut that red tape, get funding moving in the right direction, and give the cities the resources they need to start building those homes. But I think we still need it, and we especially need infrastructure like wastewater facility systems if we're going to get serious about building these homes.
And Mr. Davis, your thoughts?
I wouldn't say that I think the housing crisis is solved by any stretch. I think that my experience as someone who moved to Astoria as a renter, I moved in 2015, I was priced out of the housing market probably even then at the wage that I came into Astoria on. But at that point, there were fixer-upper houses in Astoria there were a couple in Alderbrook for under $100,000. And there's nothing under $300, $350 right now. And so I can't imagine that it's solved for someone who's working at $15 an hour or something like that at this point. And until we get to a stage where it is truly affordable, lowercase a, for people who are trying to live and work in the district, I don't think I would consider it solved. I think that communities and the state, as Representative Javadi said, the state has made some strides. I think all of the communities in the district that I've talked to and worked with are trying their best to remove hurdles for people to develop new housing. We in Astoria have something like 20 projects in community development right now that stand to put a lot of housing on the market. Some of that, or most of that, is market rate, and that doesn't help everyone out. So I think the government also plays a role in providing some housing for folks that are at lower income or folks that just need shelter. You know, we have in the district some of the highest per capita homelessness in the state. So providing that entry-level shelter like we're doing at Columbia Inn is something that the district, I think, still needs too.
Do you believe that abortion should be a decision only between a woman and her doctor and not by the state or federal government? Representative Javadi.
Yes, the decision that a woman has when it comes to her reproductive rights, and specifically abortion, should be between the doctor and the woman. I think that women find themselves in a position where they have to make that decision for a variety of reasons. And I think that no one knows best what that woman's situation is than herself. I think that when the health of the baby or the mother is in question, then she needs the advice of a healthcare provider to help her understand what her options are. I think in Oregon, that right is pretty well protected. That access to abortion is pretty well developed in the state of Oregon. I think where we can do better is when, you know, whether a woman chooses to keep the baby or to terminate the pregnancy, is to make sure we have the resources available for that woman so she can make the decisions best for her. I think no one comes to that decision lightly, and I think that recognizing that everybody feels like the life of the unborn child is sacred, and that the decision to, you know, whatever decision they make came with a lot of forethought and care, and we need to respect that decision.
Mr. Davis.
I also would say yes. I believe that the state needs to protect women's reproductive rights from the time that they learn that they're pregnant all the way through any decision that they make. I also believe that that decision should be between a woman and her doctor and not subject to intervention from the state or from the federal government. I'm endorsed by Planned Parenthood of Oregon. One of my commitments to them and to you is to support those services being covered by insurance like Medicaid within the state or Oregon Health Plan here. I also believe that the district needs those services. Clatsop County does not have a clinic for reproductive care. So the state supporting that, the implementation and founding of a clinic here so that those services would be available locally is an important thing for me. And to make sure that option is available for anyone who needs it.
Please provide your thoughts on ways to balance the various values of Oregon State forests, including drinking water supplies, fish and wildlife, use for recreation, carbon storage capacity, and restoring natural ecosystems. Mr. Davis.
I think this is one of the questions that it's really unfortunate we only have a minute and a half for, especially because Tillamook County and Clatsop County have two of the biggest chunks of state forest in the state, so it's a huge issue for both counties. I think in general that my impression is that we have historically overvalued the economic impact of the activities that we do in the state forest and not tried to seek balance between all of the possible uses of the state forest. So one of the things that I've talked about on the campaign trail especially is how forest activity can affect watersheds, can affect water supplies for communities, and how the state can play a role in making sure that those water supplies are controlled by local communities. We have the luxury here in Astoria of owning our own watershed that long predates us as counselors. I'm looking at one of my fellow counselors in the audience. And we're lucky to have that. Not every community in the district does. So sometimes they are affected, but either by siltation or by spraying in their watershed. And I think that that's something that the state can play a more active role in making sure that communities like Rockaway Beach and Neskowin and Etarks and Cape Mears can all control their own water supply. That's sort of far afield from your question, Principal, but I think forestry in general is affecting some of those issues in local watersheds, and it's an important thing for us to be aware of and think about as we look at our forestry practice.
Representative Scott.
Thank you. You know, this our district is a natural resource district, and we have farming, we have forestry, we've got the bays full of, supporting our fisheries, we have the Columbia River. I mean, how we manage those resources is our way of life. And I'd argue that whether it's the Department of ODFW locally, or it's the counties, or it's your guys that wake up at 3 a.m. to go out there and whether it's milk cows or cut down trees, they're doing it responsibly, they're the experts on it, and I think they want to do it in a way, within the limits of the law to do it right. And I feel like they have done that. We need to continue to support them. I feel like where the state is a little off here is that the policy recommendations, whether it's habitat conservation plan or whether it's CAFO permits or whether it's how we are supporting the salmon fishery, sometimes they're using too blunt a tool to do the work that we could do more nuanced. And I think we get a little lazy sometimes in the legislation, whether it's to support a special interest group or whether it's just to get a bill through a session that won't offend anybody. I think that we need to bring those stakeholders back to the table and get a policy that does it right, because I feel like the way things are going, especially right now for our state forest, it's gonna have an impact on our timber industry, and that's gonna affect a lot of jobs, a lot of people, a lot of kids, a lot of the county, and we could have done better and still met the conservation goals that are important for our way of life here on the coast.
Very good, thank you. Expanding upon this concept of the natural environment in which we live, What would you do to enhance Clatsop County's disaster resilience, and how would you engage with county emergency management to that end? Representative Javi.
Well, most of our population lives in the tsunami zone. You know, one of the challenges we ran into the last session was trying to get more housing at Seaside, especially for the part of the population in Seaside that can't afford homes that are further up on the hill out of the tsunami zone. And there weren't a lot of options because we're kind of hemmed in tsunami zone, landslide zone, wetlands, you name it. And so one of the things that we talked about was, in addition to improving evacuation signs and, you know, warning systems, was building vertical evacuation sites, get people up higher and more quickly. We need to do more in the role of training. We need to have our first responders need to be fully equipped and ready to go. We need to make sure our radio systems, when everything else goes out, are up to date and modernized so we can communicate well. I think we need to look at getting some money into the bridges that connect basically all of Highway 101, because of an earthquake, they're just not going to stand up. And we're going to find ourselves pretty quickly isolated from support. I think if we had an event like Hurricane Helene or Milton on the coast, I think we'd be in a world of hurt. The impact that would have and how it would impact a lot of our population. So there's a lot of work to do, and we need to have a loud voice as when we go back to Salem and talk about that again, because and ODOT's going to say we don't have the money for it, especially when it comes to roads and emergency management. But we absolutely need to continue to look for ways to get money from the state, but also locally have conversations on how we can invest in that ourselves locally with the resources we have.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. Davis.
So I think a lot of the things that Representative Javity said are accurate. I would also say that it's been interesting to me going to different communities in the district and talking to the local disaster preparedness groups and people who are working on CERT committees and things like that, and the challenges they're facing. I think one of the things that I've talked to several people about is just the conduits for getting funding out to districts on the coast. So there are funding cycles where people are applying for grants and trying to prove that they're ready to receive funds from the state. And part of that is, of course, an expertise thing. If you have a good grant writer, you're more likely to get in the pool, right, and get money for your community. And I think that one of the things that the state can do is both open up that process so that they are doing more of the sort of legwork, prepping things for people to effectively apply for grants, and then making sure that communities that just aren't lucky enough to have a grant writer volunteering in the community can still get those kind of resources, because we do need things like equipment caches. We do need things like up-to-date radios. Tillamook County is talking about a bond right now to see if they can get their emergency radios updated. But there are places that don't even have radio or cell phone coverage in the district, especially along the coast in South Tillamook County, where there's not, say, a wired megaphone system for people to get a warning. So I think we also need to be aware of, can we make sure that our system for disseminating news is sufficient for everyone who actually lives within the tsunami zone? So those are my responses. Thank you.
This question is a very condensed question regarding transparency and campaign finance. It is simply, what are the sources of funding for your campaign? Mr. Davis.
That is a pretty condensed version of it, I think. So we've tried that, we've answered this in some of the questionnaires we've provided to local papers. I think my top five funders, and this changes a little bit over time, so excuse me if this is not 100% on, but SEIU, which is my union, I work for them, or work as a member of SEIU at the Oregon Health Authority. They gave $15,000 to my campaign. Logan Landy, who was the previous candidate, he gave $10,000, which was what was in his campaign coffers. Debbie Booth Schmidt, who's sitting in the audience, who was a previous candidate for House 32, gave $5,000, I think. $3,000, she's telling me. I got a significant donation from AFSCME, also about $5,000. That's another union that I used to be a member of. And Clatsop Citizens for Good Governance, which is a local group that has helped out, especially with county commission races in the past, but they chose to give about $5,000 to the campaign. So those are my big funders at the moment.
And Representative Javid?
I think campaign finance reform is important, and I voted for it this last session because these races are getting ridiculously expensive. It was two cycles ago that the Democratic candidate has had to spend almost $1.5 million and the Republican candidate $1.2 million for this seat, $2.7 million. The money comes from a variety of sources, depending on which side of the aisle you're on, whether it's the unions or whether it's business interests. I think, you know, I've had both union contributions as well as business contributions. Andy just listed his out. Hampton Lumber has contributed, the Tillamook Creamery has contributed. There are PACs that are organized to collect and aggregate money from other business interests throughout the state. Those are also disseminated to different candidates. The Future PAC on the Democrat side is the same thing as the Brand Balance PAC and the Evergreen PAC on the right side. The campaign finance reform that we passed this last session will fix some of that, but it doesn't go into effect until, I think, 2027. That being said, I think, you know, and one of my campaign donors, I get at, maybe this is where this question is going. You know, the Koch brothers, for example, is an out-of-state organization. I don't know either of the Koch. I mean, the one that's still alive. They own Georgia Pacific. Georgia Pacific happens to own Wana Mill. Wana Mill employs hundreds of people in our district. They're interested in supporting candidates that align with their interests and making sure that they continue to have, they can operate in a business-friendly environment. So I try to be careful with those that I accept to make sure that nothing nefarious is going on, but there's a variety of sources.
Thank you. This community member has a question regarding your visibility in our community. It says, seems our current state representatives haven't been visible in the Astoria area in the past few years. Will you be available through town halls across your district, north and south? Mr. Davis, again?
So I haven't been in the seat yet, so I can't guarantee anything necessarily, but I will say that one of the complications of me taking on this office were I to win this race is to, it is a direct conflict with my job as a research analyst at OHA. So this would become my full-time job. I'd have to quit my day job. And that leaves me with the luxury in some sense of spending the non-session part of the year talking to people in the district about what they care about, what they're experiencing, and even trying to get back on the weekends when we're not in session and talk to people about what their perceptions of what's going on in the legislature are. I'm happy to have town halls throughout the district. I think that going door to door is an experience on the campaign trail, and you hear a lot about what people are really focused on in their day-to-day life. But I think town halls are an interesting experience too. You know, even before the event tonight, I was talking to some community members who give public testimony at our city council meetings, and that kind of community input about what's going on in people's lives, what's going on in their neighborhood, is super important for us as representatives. You know, whether it's at the state legislature or city council, for us to be able to guide our actions and guide our staff toward good resolution for our community, we need to be a presence in the community and hear from people. So yes, I would plan to do that.
And Representative Johnson?
Well, I am shocked that you haven't seen me around. Maybe it's just all the postcards that have been flying out lately, but I've tried, you know, I'm very active in the district. I'm up here weekly. Sometimes I'm meeting with one or two people. Sometimes I'm meeting with large groups. Whether it's the hospital, the port, the county managers, Bornstein Seafoods, or Pacific Seafood, or whether I'm meeting with groups down in Seaside to discuss housing issues or, you know, forestry issues. The district is huge. And so, you know, I'm still a full-time dentist. When I'm not in session, when I'm in session, I'm working at the office one day a week. When I'm not in session, I'm working at the office 4 days a week. My mornings often start at 4 a.m., and sometimes, like tonight, it's going to be 11 p.m. by the time I roll back into the house. Some of those meetings happen, virtually online. Some of them, but most of them are in person. It stretches from Neskowin, which is 2.5 hours almost from here, all the way out to Klatskanai, and everything in between. We have multiple incorporated cities, unincorporated cities. So it's a gig, and last time I checked, we're not doing this for the pay. And what I could do better, apparently, is make sure you guys know when and where I'm at. I mean, I will bother the Daily Historian a little bit more and see if we can maybe, get that advertised better. But I promise I'm here and working as hard as I can to represent you and your concerns.
Thank you. That concludes our questions. And so at this time, each candidate is afforded 2 minutes for concluding remarks. As Mr. Davis, you went first in your introductory remarks. We're going to have Mr. Javadi go first in concluding remarks. Mr. Javadi.
Thank you. Again, I appreciate everyone being here, and thank you to the AEW and to Andy for being here. We have a great district, and what I'll continue to do is make sure that the Capitol and the legislators over there realize that the coast is different, that we're unique, and that we have special needs over here, and we require those resources, everything ranging from infrastructure, like our wastewater facility treatment, so we can make sure we can build, pushing back on the FEMA BIOP, which will severely limit our capacity to build affordable housing, both the big A and little A kind, look to champion more jobs, look for ways to capture more revenue from tourists as they come through here to help fund some of the failing roads and other infrastructure issues that we have. Looking for all sorts of ways to support the businesses, both public entities and private entities, natural resources and not. And like I said, I've spent the last session working really hard to be bipartisan. I don't agree with the nasty partisanship that's happening at the national level. I think we can do better. I think we are doing better here locally. And I think one thing that makes the North Coast great is just the people that are here, and that this is a friendly place to be. And I want to keep it that way, and hope that as we continue to work and look out for our interests, we put people before politics, and that we make this place continue to be the great place we want to raise our families and come to retire and earn a living. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Davis.
My thanks as well to the AUW and to KMUN and the Historian for hosting us tonight. Thank you, moderator, for hosting us and giving us great questions. I think this is the last time we're up on stage together, so thank you, Representative Javadi, for doing these forums and providing a good debate for the public to hear from us. I'm thankful for the opportunity to be here to speak to all of you and for everyone coming out. I don't have any closing comment about myself as a candidate necessarily. I think what I'm excited about tonight is, no offense to anyone in the audience who might take this the wrong way, but a lot of the crowds that we see for these things is a relatively older skewed population. And there's a row of younger folks in the back today that, from Tongue Point, thank you, former Commissioner Sullivan. And I think, I just want to communicate that I'm excited that you all are taking the time to be here and take in this process. 30 years ago, I was probably your age, which says something about me and the amount of hair I've got left and how white it is. But I think it's great that you're involved, and I hope that you stay that way. Former Commissioner Sullivan is a great resource to connect you with people in the community who would love to get you more involved and have you at the table as we talk about these issues. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. So thank you for sharing your ideas, your platforms, and doing so in a manner of civil discourse. So thank you very much, and hopefully.
This concludes part one of the Astoria Candidates Forum. To hear part two featuring candidates in the race for the Astoria City Council and the Warrenton City Commission, go to kmun.org.